We are live. Catfish, you ready, brother? We're live.
I am ready, brother.
Ready. Welcome to all our viewers. It is 9:30, which on a Wednesday, and so begins What Embargo. I'm one of your hosts, Big Tuna.
I am your other host, the one and only Catfish.
The Catfish, and you're looking
the Catfish.
Mighty...
There is only one.
You're looking mighty fine this evening. Very, You're looking a little bit cleaner tonight.
That's just because I have all of this awesome gazebo hiding my awesomeness behind me.
And wait, so you're not in a basement?
No, I'm not in a basement. I'm not in a basement at all.
Neither am I. And I think that's important that we clarify to those out there that we are
you
not in a basement.
You want to clarify for him, bro?
Yeah, I would like to say, Tuna.
Why don't you go ahead and clarify for Tuna?
Two things. One thing. Yes, I made a mistake and I called Trevor from Cuban Cigar website Tommy. But at least they both begin with T. It's an F up on my part, but oh well. Two, I am not in a basement. I'm in a fucking garage. There's a difference. I park my vehicle in here. So one of them's a little bit better. And then in regards to language, we're going to work on it. I know I just dropped the F-bomb, but so be it.
Yes, we are going to work on our language. I promise. I promise. The first one, we were a little bit excited, a little bit nervous. So sometimes the language, you know, tends to get a little bit of Eddie Murphy on you, but it is what it is. What are you going to do?
It rolls off the fucking tongue, man. It just rolls.
See there? You just did it again. You just did it again.
That's okay.
Maybe you'll just be like Logan and I'll just be like Rob, although I'm going to go ahead and sip on this bourbon right here for a second.
No, you're too funny for Rob, and I'm just, well, everything too good about Logan. So
you're definitely a lot better looking.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Logan is one ugly mother. So, anyways.
So what are we going to talk about today? Since it's episode dose, what are we talking about?
Episode dose. Well, last time we kind of talked about spotting fake Cubans, and we started talking about kind of the embargo between Estados Unidos and Cuba. And today we are going to be talking more about Habanos and the global brands that most people know about. You know, I realize we're going to talk about global brands. Maybe we should kind of give a brief description about what Habanos S.A.
Yeah, definitely.
Is.
Tell people what is a global brand in regard to Habanos S.A. as a company, if we consider them that.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a company. Do you want to talk about Habanos S.A. and then I'll talk about the brands? Or do you want me to do Habanos S.A.?
I want you to do Habanos S.A.
Okay, so...
You should do it all.
All right. Habanos S.A. is basically the Cuban state tobacco company. And, you know, this was once Cuba Tobacco, or it's part now, it's called Habanos S.A. It was Cuba Tobacco. And they control all tobacco coming out of Cuba, which we mostly know about cigars because we don't worry about all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. So that kind of is a very brief summary about Habanos S.A., which I think pretty much wraps it up.
They're basically like the company. So if there was a, you know, my father cigars in Nicaragua, and they ran everything in Nicaragua, nobody else was allowed to do anything out of Nicaragua, that's what Habanos S.A. is. So, you know, we commonly refer to Cuban cigars as Habanos, but that's also the name of the company. So whatever we refer to Habanos S.A., just for some of you that are newer, that's what we're referring to is basically the governing body of Cuban tobacco, if you will.
Yeah.
And it, just like anything else, they have different divisions and whatnot. And so one of the things that we wanted to go over today was the global brands or the international brands, or basically the brands that are sold everywhere, because there's a lot of really interesting and unique Cuban cigars that aren't sold all over and offer different flavors for the different palates that are out there, for the different communities and countries of cigar smokers that are all over. So we kind of wanted to go over that tonight.
Yeah.
But then we also wanted to highlight, since it's episode number two, the Monte Cristo number two, which we both posted reviews of today.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I thought
we covered that.
I didn't put two and two together. I didn't
of course, obviously you didn't put two and two together.
Maybe we'll have to do like the number five when we do episode.
And technically, Technically, it's number one, and, you know, it's one of those things where everybody's always pissed off about Cigar Aficionado's rating system and who's number one. Everybody's got a bitch and moan about it, so I think it's worthy.
It's a worthy
discussion, you know.
It's the American retailers who pitch a fit, and we'll get into that.
Well, they're pissed off of that for a whole other reason, but, yeah.
They're
so anyways, back to the global brands. What are the global brands? Tell everybody what the global brands are.
Well, there are several brands under this Habanos SA portfolio. There are arms underneath Habanos. And today we're going to be talking about the global brand, which is worldwide availability. These are their biggest brands. These are what everybody knows. That's what we're going to focus on today. But we are going to be talking about the other brands throughout this show. So some of the other brands are called the niche brands, multi-local brands, and the local brands. I myself am a really big fan of the cigars coming out of the local brands rather than most of the other, the global brands. And so forth. But the global brand is obviously the brand that is most well-known. They have a dominant share in the market, so they get all the best tobacco. They get a lot more money than anybody else in a lot of the other lines. And they get a little bit more attention put to them, basically, which is kind of what you can agree. And if I'm correct on this, they can't have regional editions made for them because they are global brands. They've never made
I believe that is the case. And I don't know the exact specifics of it, but if you look at any of the regional brands, it's always smaller. The smaller branches, and it's always in Ventolas they don't normally do.
Yeah, exactly. But the global brands never get regional editions. They are mostly the cigars that are picked for limitadas, but that's not always the case. So I think with that being said, I think we should just dive right into the global brands and begin with the biggest one, Cohiba. So, first global brand, and this is kind of considered their flagship brand, and that's Cohiba. And the interesting thing about it is it's the only brand in the global brand market that is post-revolution. This was established
really?
In
1980.
All the other ones are pre-revolution.
I didn't know that.
This was established in 1966. It's the most expensive cigar that Habanos makes. And along with that, it was only commercially released until 1984. For some reason, I'm getting this Cigar Federation talking thing. I don't know what that means.
Weird.
Oh, there you go. I'm back now. But either way, it wasn't commercially released until 1984. From 1966 to 1984, Cohibas could only be given to you, if you were a diplomat.
Yeah, a good friend of mine who's an extreme collector, if you will, has several diplomatic Cohibas in his collection from back in the day.
Wow.
Some of them that came from Castro's Personals blend. You know, just insane, insane stuff. But I knew that at one point in time that they were only given to as diplomatic gifts or if you knew somebody, you know.
Yeah, so Cohiba's the most well-known. And the interesting thing is, I think of Cohiba as a brand, but it's a brand under the Habanos, portfolio brand.
It's easily the biggest name in cigars, if you will.
And it's got four lines underneath the brand. There's the classic line, which is the Espanditos and the Robusto and Especial. And then you have the 1492 line, which is where the Siglos are.
Mm-hmm.
So Siglo 1 through 6... that's a part of the 1492 line. And those weren't released until 1992, honoring 500 years from when Christopher Columbus came and ruined everything.
Nice.
So the guy's an asshole, man. People love him to death. I don't know why we celebrate him here, but we do. But the Siglo 6 was actually released 10 years later in 2002. So, and they haven't, I thought they were going to be releasing a Siglo 7 in 2012, but they didn't do it. I don't know. They've got it figured out. They don't care.
Probably.
Yeah. And then the other one, which is the Maduro, which most people know as Maduro 5. You look frustrated, Catfish.
It's just a weird cigar. Well, I'm not a huge Cohiba fan in general. And the Maduro 5 was just a weird cigar. But I mean, that was one of those cigars that, like the Bahiki, they put a ton of time and effort into. And I know people
that
either
five years old.
Yeah, I know people that just absolutely adore them.
I don't.
And then guys like me who have tried them aged to try them fresh, and I'm like, eh. You know, I tried like the Robusto size. I mean, maybe I'd like some of the smaller sizes that they have, but I don't know.
You know what cigar? I'm sorry. You know what cigar is very comparable to it? I think is Davidoff's Maduro.
Yeah, I've never had one of those. Everybody always talks about how awesome those things are.
Well, yeah,
I'm a Davidoff whore, so.
Yeah, but I think Davidoff Maduros are kind of some ways similar to Cohiba Maduros, but and then the fourth line is the Bahique line, which was released in 2010. It was once a limited smoke, still is pretty limited, but they released the Bahique in 2010, and it's gotten tons of attention since.
Mm-hmm.
So all tobacco for the Cohiba brand comes from the San Juan y Martinez and San Luis farms, which are in the region of Huerta Abajo, which is in Pinar del Rio, which, for all of you who don't know Cuba, is the little western part. You know, you have Havana, rest of Cuba, then Pinar del Rio. So that's the Cohiba. Do you have anything to add to that?
Nah, I'd heard at one point in time, and I don't know if this is legit or not. I still need to get the Min Ron Nee book to educate myself up, but I'd heard they have a very, very small selective farm, you know, 10,000 acres or something along those lines that all their tobacco comes from, and that they pretty much, you know, control that brand with a specific, you know, farm in general. But I can't say that's legitimate or not, you know, just something I heard, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Oya has its own plantation.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, I mean, it might be. I mean, they probably just get the best tobacco from all those areas.
Yeah, no kidding.
The next biggest brand is the Monte Cristo, which we'll be talking more about the number two later. But this is a pre-revolution brand that, you know, was on the market in 1935, and it got its name from the book The Count of Monte Cristo. And, Dustin, you want to share that story about it, man.
Well, I don't have my dates exactly correct, but basically post-World War I, the British were real, the demand in Europe for cigars was huge. So they had these guys rolling nonstop all day and all night. So they would hire people to come in and read to the torcedores so that they wouldn't fall asleep. You know, and one of the things that they would read to him was Dumas's book, The Count of Monte Cristo. And apparently that was their favorite story. So the story goes, and that's where they came up with the name. The two guys who started it were Alfonso Menendez and Pepe Garcia, and they actually bought the company from the Francao family or business, if you will. I don't know the exact history behind the Francao. I know at the time it wasn't owned by Francao, but then it went back into the Francao family name. But I may be wrong about that. Anyways, they bought the H. Upman factory from them. And so it originally, Monte Cristo started out as an H. Upman, or was made in the H. Upman factory as the H. Upman Monte Cristo. And oddly enough, the Hunters distributors out of Great Britain, which is the other half of Hunters and Franco, oddly enough, convinced them to just go with Monte Cristo. And that's when they changed to just Monte Cristo. I want to say that was in the late 30s. And from there, not too long after that, right before World War II, in the late 30s, I would say 39-ish, is when they couldn't import them anymore to Great Britain. And so Monte Cristo has always stayed a real small batch. At that time, it was very small batch, high-priced cigars, and these two guys were obviously making them out of Cuba, and eventually they sold, I want to say, around the time that the Cuban Revolution took over, Castro took over. Initially, they just had sizes that were based on the numbers. I don't think the number two was there, but, you know, your classic smaller ring gauges, one, two, three, four, the longer type stuff, the Legitos, Legito number twos. And I don't know the exact Vitolas, so don't quote me on which ones were there. I'd have to look it up at CubanCigarWebsite.com if I wanted to know exactly when. But they did started adding Tubos in 1940, which I thought was very interesting. And it made me wonder if that was done to help out, you know, sustain humidity as they went from, traveled from Cuba all the way up to Europe, you know, in these boats and ships.
They did
it. I don't know why.
That's why.
I don't know why they did it, but I assume that's why.
That's why. I had this old book from like 1911, which talks about it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I never knew why. I just assumed. And then the other name that needs to be mentioned is a guy named Jose Manuel Gonzalez. And he was the guy who took them over after the Castro Revolution took over. And apparently he was a master roller at Partagas factory, took over the Monte Cristo production, and was the guy known as the blender, the guy behind all the classic blends that ended up being what we have today, I guess, if you will. So they are, they have a long history. The two guys, Menendez and Garcia, I believe they got out and they went to the Canary Islands. One of them went to the Canary Islands to start producing cigars. One of them went to Jamaica. All sorts of interesting, you know, stuff behind the brand itself. But in the end, they've had the sustainability as one of the top blends, for Cuban tobacco since they've been around, in all honesty. They've always been in demand. So, and I like the minimalist attitude of the insignia and of the label. It's always kind of stayed the same, very similar.
You know, I mean, it's been classic. It's been classic since its creation, which I dig. You know, there's none of those major changes. I know they recently did a change this year. They made the Florida Lee gold, but...
Yeah. And later on in the show, when we talk about the number two, we'll talk about some of the real popular, or what you think are some of the better blends from that company. One of which I'm going to light up right now because I was heartily disappointed by this unnamed other Cuban that I just got done smoking.
Yeah. But, you know, the Monte Cristo brand has two lines under it. The Classic Series, which most everybody knows. And then they have the Open Series, which was launched in 2009, which I really hate the Open Series. I don't even know why.
I've never had one. Everybody always says they hate them. And I normally like lighter smokes, too.
I hate them. They suck.
Maybe I'll try and get some from somebody, get a trade.
I know novice smokers who don't even want to smoke them. But, you know, all the tobacco used in the Monte Cristo brand is from the Vuelta al Bajo region, which is in Pinar del Rio. So these are the big regions. This is a big region. This is where all the big, good tobaccos grow.
Yeah.
Moving right along then. So while I'm smoking my Monte number two, next we're going to be talking about the Partagas brand, which is another one of those really well-known brands. This was older than Monte Cristo, and this was a brand that was established in 1827. And, you know, it wasn't until 1845 that the factory was even constructed, which was in, I just said 1845, which was named in honor of the brand. And right now the factory is closed, but you can still go into the cigar shop. I don't know if they're going to reopen it. Dustin's on mute right now, so... Even if he can hear me, maybe he can comment if he knows if the factory is going to be open. I see the face, buddy. Creep. But like Cohiba and Monte Cristo, it's one of the most well-known brands. And all tobacco in the Partagas brand is made from tobacco in the region of Vuelta al Bajo. Dustin, you have no comments for Partagas, possibly, maybe, yeah?
I love Partagas, but only some of them for some reason. I don't know why. It's really hit and miss for me. But I think it's a great brand. Specifically, the shorts are unbelievable. Their smaller cigars are unbelievable. Those are the cigars that will make you, that you can give to a novice smoker or somebody who thinks a big re-engage is going to have more power. You should throw them some of those little guys, and they will knock them on their socks. They're so powerful. I love them. I love Partagas. I'm a huge fan.
Have we ever talked about the E-9A? Unbelievable.
No, we haven't. And I don't have a ton of experience with it. I've had a couple. And I wasn't blown away by it, and I'm not a D4 fan in all honesty, but I love the E2, I love the shorts, I love the Mille Fleurs, I love the two, and I love the Lusitanias, you know.
Oh yeah, those are great. I'm not a big E2 guy. I just But, crazy. You know, the 898s, you know, once you smoke a couple more, we got to talk about it, because those are hit or miss. I mean, those are real.
Are they? And I've heard that, too.
You can get some really good ones, and you can get some which are just really disappointing. So you can get some 8s or you can get some 9s. Yeah, you probably got the 8s. But moving right along, you know, the next brand to get down to is Romeo and Julieta, Romeo and Juliet. Which was established in 1875. You know, this is another pre-revolution brand. It gained a lot of ground in the early, in the 19th century. Because, you know, this was one of the first really big brands to have bands on the cigars. Did you know that?
Really? I didn't know that.
I mean, yeah. Well, and you know, what's funny is, we'll get into it much later on, but Ramon Iones, if I recall correctly, was the first brand to really decorate the box. You know, the dress boxes, they were the mm-hmm. first. This was the first brand that really did it. Which they should show more love to because of that. Yeah, man.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, obviously, it's named after Shakespeare's story, love drama. Mm-hmm. And the cigars in that are composed from the Puerto Bajo region. I'm not a big fan of the Romeo y Julietas. I just can't get into them.
They're hit and miss, dude, but I like, I really want to try the Cazadores because everybody talks about those.
Those are very
I really like their smaller cigars. Their smaller ring gauge stuff just has this kind of cool dark fruit thing and that goes on, and I freaking love those. But I haven't gotten too deep into the brand. I haven't had the Bellicosos. I love the short Churchills. I haven't had a wide Churchill. I love the regular Churchills. So they when they hit, the ones that they have that hit are just freaking awesome. I love them. I mean, I
hate the name Short Churchill and Wide Churchill. It's just like, I hate it.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
It's stupid. But then again, I think it was
fat,
like,
Robusto.
Yeah, you know, exactly. But, you know, they made that Wide Churchill, and I know the Americans went crazy over it.
And now they have the Petite Churchill, and I got that confused with the Short Churchill the other day, and I was like,
what's
the hell is this?
What's
it's
like
a
the,
4-inch. 4-inch, you know, 4x50 or 4x48 or something around those lines. Around a 4-inch.
Maybe they should just call everything a Churchill on that line. I don't know.
It makes no sense to me because to me, when I think Churchill, I think big monstrous cigar. You know,
yeah.
But I've heard a lot of people really dig the wide Churchills and say they're really consistent. The short Churchill is one of my favorites from them, without a doubt. I definitely like it. It's not like something that I buy boxes of, but something that I like to have around.
Yeah, they come. Don't they come in 10-count boxes too? I mean, it's a good little.
Yep.
If you want to buy a 10-count box, buy a 10-count.
Yep,
so
exactly.
That's the one thing Cuba does. We can talk about that another time. I love how they mm-hmm. make their cigars available in like 25-count boxes or 10-count mm-hmm. boxes. It's something that, you know, a lot of these other manufacturers in the United States should pay attention to.
Yeah, you can get You can get a 3-count tube of the Churchills.
Yeah, you can
just
have fun.
Which is freaking awesome. I
think the Padron family is kind of doing it. They understand, you know, they've been making 10-count boxes and stuff.
Yeah, they do have some of the little smaller box stuff, which is decent.
Yeah.
But nobody does it in the same format, you know? I mean, I think it would be a, you know, they're always like gift packs, you know? And that's, gift packs are BS, always over price. You know, and it's always crap.
Next up, we have, man, we're flying through these things, but that's okay. We have Boya de Monterey.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is your baby. Pre-revolution, established 1865, and it's, you know, kind of translated as the Valley of Monterey or the Hole of Monterey. And this was, it gets its name, if I'm correct, from a terrain in the Puerto Bajo region.
Really?
Which is just where they kind of began growing the tobacco, which went into these cigars. And I know that there is, the oil plantation is in San Juan Martinez. And, you know, most of the tobacco, I think, for the cigars comes from there. But that's, you know, all I know about that is the Double Corona, which is one of the most famous Double Coronas.
That's all you know about them?
No,
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying it's one of the most famous.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I know more about that. I don't smoke Oyas, but I know, man. Jeez, Epicura Especiales, man. But there's no Ligero in that blend whatsoever.
I know. That's why I love it.
You love it, man. It's just light.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's just mild for days, dude.
Keep it light, Dutch. Keep it light.
I need a cab. I'm all about the mild fan club here. Screw. I shouldn't. Sorry. I'm not going to curse.
What are you doing, man? You're flicking the burn paper.
I know. I'm trying to be a lot more calm and under control, but
yeah, we should make
say
a
no
comment.
To Lajero. Say no to Lajero.
Say no. We need to be respectful. After our last remark, we had an international viewer who I guess we're just going to be honest in name. His name's Guy. Love the guy to death. I have no idea who he is, but he's from Cabasson, France. He kind of was up front with us, and I respect him for it.
That's cool. I don't mind. I'm a musician, so if people want to tell me I suck, I don't care, dude. Please tell me. I'd rather have somebody tell me, because I'm the kind of guy where, you know, if you're going to yell at me, go ahead, yell at me. Tell me what you think. I'll tell you what I think.
After he was honest with us, I thought of Ari Gold and Entourage, and I was like, let's hug it out, bitch. You need to hug this out. So, Guy, if you're listening, we love you. So,
now, one thing I will say about the Hoyo line that I think is really cool is there's a lot of variance in the strength of some of the cigars. Some of their smaller cigars have a lot of strength to them. A real unheralded one is the I can't remember what it is. It's 5.5x40. I'll look it up real quick.
You know, while you're looking it up, I think it's a good time. You know, wouldn't you agree that there's more variation in the Habanos portfolio within lines? You know, you look at the Monte Cristo, and you have the number twos, you have Especials, you have Edmundos, Petit Edmundos.
Well,
they're all unique.
Well, I mean, they are, but to me, when I smoke Amani, I know I'm smoking Amani. You could unband Amani, and I know I'm smoking it. If you were like, okay, you know, here's a bunch of Cubans from Monte Cristo, you know, and what do you think they are? I mean, I kind of know what the Monte Cristo.
Yeah, it's Amani. I mean, I could pick up a Cohiba unless it's fake, but.
But the Hoyos specifically, they're all a lot different. A lot of them are different. I mean, the DC is extremely light.
Oh, it's way light.
And as they age, just become extremely floral and really delicate. It's just such a great little profile. But then
I'm not gonna lie, it's take
like the Epicures. The Epicures
number
are
two.
Totally different. The Palma's Extra, that's the one I was thinking of. The Palma's Extra.
Yeah.
It to me, it tastes like a Monte Cristo when I smoke it. And I remember when I first got them and they sucked, and I was like, this is terrible. Well, why would anybody like this? And I let them sit for, you know, 90 days, which is what everybody should do, and we'll get in that later. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, why was I giving these away? These are unbelievable. And they're relatively inexpensive, you know, less than $4 a piece. And, if you can find them internationally at your local LCBH, and
at your local LCBH, crossing the border or flying somewhere.
Yes, if you're out in the international waters, unbelievable little cigar. And then the Epicure 1, the Epicure 2, the Epicure Special, the Double Epicure is a fantastic smoke for anybody who's had them. They're really hitting their stride right now. They have a lot of variants, where to me, I don't think Monte Cristo has a lot of variants. You know, they vary, don't get me wrong. I have all my different likes in the Monte Cristo line, and I'll talk about that later. But I think Hoyo has a lot of variants, whereas Partagas, they all kind of have signature Partagas flavors. Hoyo's all over the board, man. That's why I like them.
When it comes to Coronas, Cuba really, you know, Cuba really, when they make a Corona, there's nothing light about it, I don't think.
There's nobody. Nobody can touch their Coronas. Nobody can.
I don't think anybody can touch. I don't think anybody can touch their Coronas. I don't think anybody can touch their double Coronas. We could go into Robustos too, but then we might just be pissing some people off. So what were we talking about? Oh yeah.
Yeah. Next up. Who's next?
Oh man, you're gonna love it. H. Upman.
Yeah.
We all love H. Upman.
If you don't like H. Upman, you suck.
You suck. It's just...
I would have said something rude, but I didn't want to be rude.
Yeah, here's an interesting thing about H. Upman.
I'll tell you all about it. Go ahead.
Okay, do you know that it's not always been a global brand?
Doesn't surprise me, since the guys who owned it at one point in time turned it into Monte Cristo.
Yeah, it used to be a multi... It was smaller until 2007.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a multi-local brand. It was down there with... Jose Piedra. But, you know, and then ever since 2008, I think the international market's really gotten much more interested in it.
The thing with Upman is, traditionally, and I say this up until maybe 2012, and 2012 has just been a great year and beyond for Habanos in general, but traditionally, to me, they were one of those brands that needs a lot of time, and then all of a sudden, they just wake up and blow your mind. To me, the number two, the Mag 46,
the 46 is great.
Sir Winston's, I mean, when you put like 6, 7, 8, 9 years on those, they're the best cigars in the world, hands down. I mean, they're just unfreaking real. But yeah, they have these weird periods where they just suck, and they're just terrible. That was the first brand I fell in love with, and I did an aging experiment with the number two specifically from 2005. Let me see if I can remember the years. 2005, 2006, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. And basically took notes, and I wish I would have saved these. They're gone now in the world of dead phones, but there was just... I would just see like such a huge difference in how they developed over time. It was almost like I could predict at what age level they would just all of a sudden wake up. And really, I mean, God, when you get them with that 5, 6, 7 year mark, they're just unbelievable. Diplomaticos is kind of like that too. They're just terrible for the first 3 or 4 years, and then all of a sudden they wake up and blow your mind. But yeah. Connoisseur 1 is another one that's really, really killer that I've only gotten turned on to recently. But lately, 2012 and beyond, I mean, some of the Connoisseur 1s I got from 2012 and some of the Majestics I got, which is a real underrated smoke from them, are just ridiculous right off the truck. Just ridiculous. Amazing. Were Maybe you not the ever, complexity of age, but...
So you, I mean, I you know, I've smoked a couple, I have a couple H. Upmans that have the original band on.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a bunch.
I love the new band. The new band's cool, but you know that old band is very, you know, it's very. I mean, you can see the connection with Monte Cristo. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
But you know, so far everything we've talked about, all the tobacco is coming from the Huerta Bajo region. But you know, this H. Upman's just gotten a lot of attention. You know, and they've had three new Vitolas since 2008. I don't think they've really cut anything out. I think it's a brand that's really on the rise. I remember when the Magnum 46 Tubos were getting a lot of attention, and even the Mag 50 Tubos. But yeah, that's that. And then the final global brand, which is one of those brands you're like, why is this a global brand? But then you understand the economics and the entire thing, and that's Jose El Piedra.
Yeah.
Which
I
is
love Piedra.
Short filler.
I know, and I need some. I don't have any, and I love, like, that's the kind of thing that I just want to stick it in my mouth and, like, chew on it. I don't even want to smoke it. I just want to chew on it and play a banjo.
You know, I've only smoked a couple of them, but they're really good cigars.
Oh, they're freaking amazing. I remember when I first got them, and they were all green and nasty looking and rustic, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I tried it, and I was like, wait, this is probably the best $2 cigar I've ever had, and then
for a yard cigar,
and I've tried all the short filler cigars, and I think we should do a show on the short filler cigars at some point in time, kind of compare and contrast them all. But of all the ones I've had, and I haven't had the Florida Cano. I'm trying to think if there's any others that I haven't had, but of all of them, that's the one where
Florida
I just.
Canos aren't-
I just, I don't know. You know, some of them aren't, but
I just,
that's the one I could just chew on it, and it tastes good, and I just want to, like, stick it in my mouth and chew on it and spit tobacco and go fishing and play a banjo and, you know, get all yee-haw and rednecked out, dude. I love them.
But, you know, it's a global brand. None of it's from Huerta La Bajo. It's from, you know, the central eastern areas, Huerta Arriba. You know, Jose El Piedra, it's like Jose El Stone. But, you know, the areas where they come from, a lot of that tobacco is known for snuff. They're very affordable cigars. But they're really open about it. I mean, Habanos doesn't care. They say it's short-filled cigar. People still forget smoke.
Yeah.
People love them.
Yeah, the sizes that I think people tend to agree are the best are the ones that are 42 ring gauge.
Yeah.
I want to say they have like half a dozen different sizes, and it seems like the one that's 5x52, you know, is the one that everybody seems to really go for, the Petite Corona size. I can't remember what it's called. But I think that's the one that people tend to all gravitate to and say is or agree is the best of them.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's an affordable cigar. It's tasty. It's easy. It's one of those things that, I mean, for, you know, not for you and I, but, you know, for a lot of these other people that can buy Cubans easily. If you want to smoke a cigar while, like, working in the yard, Jose LPA.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the perfect yard gar. I mean, it's, like, the greatest yard gar that ever existed. Other than maybe, like, a Davidoff 3x3, in my opinion. But that's a whole other
So, but, yeah. So, those are the global brands. Those are the most well-known brands. I mean, they're easy to find. You know, if you walk into any La Casa de Habano, they're going to have them all. You know, or just any legitimate tobacco shop. You know, I would say that the Cohiba and Monte Cristo will probably be the ones most faked. But, you know, you go to a legit store, you're not going to have any problems with it. Cohibas are really expensive. If any of you are about to travel abroad and you're thinking about, oh, I'm going to go buy some Cuban cigars, just kind of be prepared for really high prices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So unless you're going to Cuba, because then you can get these amazing cigars at terrific prices. So,
so let's talk about let's talk some smack now. Let's get into the hate-filled portion of this show.
What smack are we going to talk about?
I want to bring some hate. That's what I want to do. Are you feeling hateful right now?
Do you want me to show my little thing?
What do you have to say?
No, I mean, do you want me to show the little thing where people bash Cuba, which we can then throw on the United States? Or do you want to talk hate?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go. Let's do some bad. Let's do that first.
All right.
I want to go on a tangent about the whole CA thing, but I think we should get it. Let's get through this first because we'll all just start ranting.
Yeah. All right. So as most people know, and I'm sharing my screen, you can see this, Dustin. Yeah, everyone can see this.
Absolutely.
Everybody can say, hey, Cuba makes mistakes. And this was a photo sent to us. These cigars were sent to us by a guy who emailed in. They're actually all legit. You know, he told me where he bought them, and I'm like, I know that place. I buy cigars from there. Wait, what?
When you're out of the country?
Out of the country. But I have an arrow here pointed to this El Rey del Mundo, which says Exclusivo Canada. But that is actually incorrect. Habanos, they got a little carried away in the factory and wanted to give Canada props for a cigar, which I've smoked. I'm not a huge fan of it. But it's actually an additional regional for the Pacific A. Asia Pacifica. They got a little carried away. Now, this is the point where most people would say, see, just goes to show Cuba has no quality control. Well, down here, you're going to see a Quesada. And if anyone has smoked Quesadas in their coup d'etat line, they knew that there was the Molotov, the Howitzer, and the Dagger. Now, the Molotov was the little figurado. The Howitzer was that 6x60, and the Dagger was this lovely Salomon size. But if you pay attention to the brand and the band, it says coup d'etat howitzer. Whoopsies. Where did they go wrong? So the funny thing is I actually sent a photo like that to Quesada when I bought them at the time. And Quesada's like, was that just one cigar? I said, no, it's actually three boxes I saw at the retailer. So, and they're like, whoops, we made a mistake. So
it happens, but most commonly in the Cubans, it's I'll see like an upside down band, or I'll see like no band. Like actually in this box, I'm smoking at a Mundo right now, and in the box of Mundos I got, there was one that had no band. Sometimes it'll be upside down, a cigar will be upside down, and you know, I mean, we're talking about communist employees. They don't care. They're just like, hey, you know what? Whatever. I'm just putting this cigar in there. Who cares? They're so laid back from what I've heard that it is what it is. The moral of the story is know your box, know your source, know where it's coming from, because it's going to happen from time to time, and it's not big of a deal.
And don't freak out when it does happen. Don't freak out.
Yeah, exactly.
But you want to get into hate, or you want to keep going?
Yeah, let's get into some hate, dude. So
let's get into some hate.
Every year, there's nothing short of just hate-tastic bashing of cigar aficionado because of their list. And I'll be honest, like the last few years, I was one of those haters. I did not agree with what they had picked at all. And it's not saying that these are bad cigars, but not in, in comparison to some of the other cigars that are on the list. It just kind of dumbfounds me at times. I'm like, what the hell were they smoking? Or what were they thinking? Or was this like their fifth cigar of the day? And they went, oh God, I can taste something. This is wonderful. You know, and so part of doing this show, you know, episode dose was reviewing the number two. We both did our reviews of the number two, and we're not going to get into the reviews because you can go read them.
Read them, mother. Read them.
Yeah, go read them. Give us some website hits. But it's always a debate, and it cracks me up because every year, the last 2 years of my cigar shop, we all sit around and we debate about what's gonna make number one. And this was one of the ones that
everybody does. Everybody debates about.
Yeah, so it's always a big point of topic and discussion. And to me, I think they completely missed the mark, or sometimes it seems like that certain blenders just get it, happen to get this the top spot. And maybe it's like everybody gets their due, and that's cool, and I understand. And I really, the cigar aficionado process, I have a lot of respect for, because as far as the process is concerned, they take all the cigars that got rated the highest throughout the year, throughout their 12 months or 11 months, and then they bring them all back, and then whichever ones, I can't remember how many, you know, the top 40 of those that get rated high from the second round of ratings, those go back to the number one ratings or whatever. I can't remember the exact numbers, but
it's a huge process. They
do due diligence, and so I give them credit because I think they do try and be as absolutely objective as possible. And so this year when they chose the Monte Cristo number two, I know a lot of people were talking smack about it, and to me, they can all kiss my ass because it is an unbelievable cigar. And as far as I'm concerned, I'll talk about my hate for the Monte Cristo number two because I've never been a fan up until recently. But most of the Habano smokers that I know kind of said the same thing. If they got a good box, it's a no-brainer. Because when it's on, it's an unbelievable cigar. And the one I just reviewed was September 2012, and it was freaking unbelievable. I mean, I could have broken it up into fifths. It was so complex, so many changes. And to me, for a new Monte Cristo, that is completely rare. Because a lot of the examples I had from, I'd say, the course of 2008 to 2010, early 2011, just sucked balls. And I got rid of all of them. I gave them away to my friends. Like, here's a Monte 2. Yay, go smoke this and be happy because you're smoking the real Cuban. And lately, the last few I've had from late 2012 and 2013 have just been they're blowing my mind. So that's why I wanted to do the review, especially after I saw the rating. I was like, you know, I need to sit down and actually review one of these guys that I had gotten a few recently. And it was just, it was a freaking phenomenal cigar. And I'm a huge fan of the Edmundo. That's my favorite. The Edmundo, the Petit Edmundo, the Gran Edmundo line. I think those are all unbelievable cigars. I don't think the 520 is that great. Of course, it might be good later down the line, but to me, those are freaking, they're all excellent cigars. And I know a lot of guys like the smaller stuff, and I'm not a huge fan of their smaller stuff. Not to say they're bad, they're just not my cup of tea, but, you know, lately, the Monte Cristo number two has just been, the Monte Cristo stuff's been great. So I can't see anybody bitching about it other than a retailer. Because of the simple fact,
there were some manufacturers who were bitched about it because I think mm-hmm. they wanted to be the number one, and I'm not going to go listen to their names, but
no,
it's a classic cigar. I mean, it's been great for so many darn years. I mean, I just smoked the 2007. That's what my review was of 2007. I mean, it's aging wonderfully. It'll probably be great in more years, and it's
well, I think it's the kind of profile that is very much. It can hit a lot of palates. You know what I mean?
Oh,
for
absolutely.
Me, it's more full body than what I normally like, but it's just so ridiculous. Like I could retrohale the whole goddamn thing. It was so good, and even though it has more body than what I'm normally like, you know what I mean? So it's the kind of thing that you could give to a full bodied smoker, and they're going to get something out of it. Unlike a Hoyo DC.
Yeah, they want to enjoy it. It's just too light for them. I mean, yeah, that's really.
You know, and so it, to me, I just think it's one of those cigars that can hit every palate out there to a degree. And I think the retailers, and I understand I think the point of debate is really whether or not CA should be reviewing Cubans in that regard because, you know, these poor, and I feel sorry for the retailers because I've worked at shops. If it's a cigar you like the Prensado, and the what's it called, Florida Antilles. You just stack those boxes up, and people come in and buy them like crazy. So by them not giving a, you know, a non-Cuban brand the number one, that really kills the sales for a lot of small businesses and B&Ms out there, and that sucks.
But
I understand why they're pissed.
It's an international magazine, though. I mean, it's kind of like...
Exactly.
You know, you have to think about it. When they gave Monte Cristo number two, I mean, how do you think the La Casa del Habanos did, or a lot of these other legitimate retailers did? I mean, there was people possibly overseas who saw it. Boom. I want to go buy Monte Cristo number two. I mean, yeah. And it's I respect them for doing it. I mean, I put Cubans in my top 25 just because I review cigars on the worldwide market. I don't think it would be fair for me to then just say, oh, I'm not going to put Cubans in my top 25. That's not reviewing cigars on the worldwide market. That's not taking anything into consensus.
And I understand it. And my response to those retailers who were butthurt, because there was a lot of them, I heard it from a lot of them, is, you know what, why don't you grow some balls and learn about tobacco? Because there's so many amazing, amazing cigars coming out of Nicaragua right now from these boutique companies that just destroy, you know, the domestic Cohibas and Monte Cristos that they got $18 price tags on.
Yeah.
I mean, just ridiculous how much good tobacco is out there from all the different companies from Nicaragua and the Dominican classic, you know, a lot of the classic Dominican stuff. So to me, it's when I hear that, I'm like, I just want to tell them to shut up and learn your tobacco, because if you knew anything about tobacco, then you would stock your store with good cigars. And when you sell a good cigar that's $8 or $9 to a customer, they're going to come back. They're always going to come back because there are great cigars that were on, you know, my list this year, my list last year, your list, Logan's list, that when guys get these kinds of cigars, you know, I mean, you give it to a consumer and they've never heard of it before and they're like, what is a Curavaria? I've never heard of this before. And you give it to them and they're like, holy crap, this is good. Well, that guy's going to continue buying cigars from you. Okay, you don't need to rely on the fact that some magazine gave it number one or number two or whatever for you to sell cigars. Grow some balls, become a salesman, and learn your craft. You know, and that's an end of mini rant, if you will.
No, I mean, you're absolutely
message
right.
Message to all B&M owners out there: grow some balls, do what we do, smoke a bunch of killer cigars, learn about your tobacco. Don't just walk in.
Do some work.
Oh, dude, work. I walked into this store. I'm not even going to say their name. And the guy's like, you need to buy this, you need to buy this, you need to buy this, you need to buy this. And I'm like, I don't like any of that. I don't like this, I don't like this. So what do you like? I said, well, I don't like what you're trying to sell me, you know? He's like, well, you don't have any, you don't know what taste is. Let me show you some Cubans. He starts opening all these Cubans and showing me all these fake Cubans, which some of them came from the last show from that shop.
Yeah.
And I started clowning the guy. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You know, just I have more Cubans than you have. Leave me alone, you know? And at the end of the day, if he would have been an educated guy, like the guy who's a couple blocks down in the same town, that guy sat there and starts pulling out all sorts of aged, crazy pep and roll Padillas and original run Cabaguans and El Triunfador Lanceros and stuff that I'm like, freaking out over buying them like crazy. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
end of rant about how retailers need to educate themselves and don't get into selling tobacco just because you want to make money. That's stupid. You're not going to make any money. Get into it because you love it.
Hey, man, it's all about the love, man. Love the leak.
So let's talk about Monte Cristo since we're on this Monte Cristo kick. What are some of your favorite Monte Cristo cigars? Because I kind of wanted to concentrate on that brand just because we did focus on the number two, and I think it's worthy of talking about the brand. What are some of your favorites?
You know, I don't smoke a lot of Monte Cristos. I just don't, mm-hmm. And it's. I have them as staples in my humidor, and I think because it's one of those things I like to share them. You know, if someone's like, they come over, it's just because I don't smoke Oyas. They're too light for me. I have a couple, you know, especially on number twos. But I have Monte Cristos that if someone's like, man, I'd like to smoke a Cuban, or they don't even say it, I just kind of want to share a Cuban. You know, you give them a Monte Cristo number two. It's got flavor. It's got a nice solid body. You know, it's really easy, I think. For me, and I think it can do well for a lot of other people. But when it comes to the Monte Cristo brand, I just smoke a lot of Petite Mundos. I love the size. That's my main Monte Cristo.
I know you spoke highly about the Condes, the Mexico release, which I've never had.
Oh my God. It was that 109. That 109 was the bomb.
Now, the What size? Isn't it a big size, too?
Oh, yeah. It's like a 7 by 50. I mean, it's like a double Corona with a tapered head. It's not a tapered head. You know, it's got that 109 head. So it's kind of like Figurado. I reviewed it. You know, I took some photos of it. I mean, it's a beast.
Let's check it out.
It's a huge cigar. I mean, it took me forever to smoke, and I enjoyed every little bit of it. I mean, I smoked that baby down to the tapered nub, and it was just, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it's just one of those cigars that just, it's an experience that you'll never forget. And I know they're
the other one is
expensive.
The 2008.
Which one's that?
The 2008 LE. The 2008 LE that they did.
The Sublime?
Yep, that's the other one that everybody freaks out about.
Have you ever smoked it?
Nope. I haven't, and I've heard, I mean, I want to say that they're going, if you can find them, which is rare, they're in the upwards of the 400-ish to 450-ish range these days, if you can get your hands on a 10, and that's a 10-count box.
Yeah, it's a 10-count box, yeah, and it's, you know, I got them back when they're, I'll send you one, man, you got to give me your address, let me send you one from there. Okay. Yeah, I just broadcast that, I don't care. I mean, it's a terrific cigar, but you know, that's actually like my bad juju cigar, because I live in Mexico. I smoked that cigar. Yeah, you live in Mexico. Exactly. I smoked that cigar. It's like beautiful out. So I'm like, man, I'm just going to chill on my patio. I'm gonna light up a Sublime. And every time I do it, it just starts raining. So it's like, what the hell? So it's happened like 6 times. So I don't smoke them anymore just because it's like, oh, it's going to rain. So
my 2 cents is I'm real big on the Edmundo. That's from a consistency standpoint. Every Edmundo I've ever had has been unbelievable.
They're too light for me.
Yeah, and the petite Edmundo is unbelievable, and the Grand Edmundo, which shout out to my man Cigar G of Bodega Premium Blends, he ranked that number one this year, and that reminded me that I needed to find some, and I did find some.
Oh, the 2010
when I was traveling internationally, of course, at my local LCDH, I found some of the 210 Granite Mundo, and oh my god!
I haven't smoked one in a little while. I need a lot of that.
Oh, it's good.
Maybe we should smoke real hardcore
mesquite. That mesquite, you know, smoky Monte profile just kills it, dude. Oh my god, that's good. That's gonna be. I mean, that to me, I had a 520, and it was like, it was good, but it wasn't, you know, $30 good. And then the Granite Mundo to me was, those are going to be worth money one day. I guarantee it.
Yeah, so. You know, and I haven't smoked the Double Mundo, but I've heard good things about the Double Mundo.
I've heard mixed on that, but it's still young, so I always wait. And that's pretty expensive too. So
yeah, it's probably.
Well, after enough of our ranting and raving, let's get to actually some content from some of our wonderful viewers out there. I'm going to screen share something. We had a gentleman send us in a submission, and I only put a couple pictures up because, honestly, this dude sent us like 20 pictures. It was awesome.
I know. It was like
exactly what we were looking for.
Crime scene evidence.
Yeah, and he wanted to know if we thought this cigar was legit. So I'm going to pull it up for you guys real quickly so you can see it and give you guys an idea. Maybe it's not coming up here. Hold on. It should be.
It was a Ramon Ayone specially selected.
Yep, it was a RAS, as they say.
RAS.
Let me see. Does that show it? Nope, it doesn't.
That's your background.
Oh, dude. Come on. Okay, let me pull it up this way and see if that will do it for me.
You're like Rob, man. You got to have this crap prepared.
I did. I totally had it ready. Okay, here we go.
I had it.
Boom. Here we go. Okay, so this was what was sent to us. And I'm just going to show you guys a couple pictures of it real quick. This is called a Ramon Alone's Special Select. It's one of the best Robustos out there. Specifically right now, if you get anything from the Muir factory, the MUR factory from 2012, beyond, just unbelievable. They do develop a really marked honey note after about 4 or 5 years. So they're great fresh, and they're great when they're aged. Anyways, so the first thing that I looked at, if you guys look where I'm moving my little cursor over, you see this nice little box press right there? These guys come in a really nice dress box. So when I see this slight box press right there, that's when I knew immediately, okay, this is legit.
Yeah.
Right? It's because the Cuban box press is not pronounced at all. It's very slight. And it's something that if you've seen it enough times, you know what it is. Secondly, we have a triple cap. We have one, two, and the third one's right here. And you can see it on some of the more photos that we have, but that was just a good one. And then the band itself. And the band, you can see, is nice and raised. It's very clean cut. It's perfect. There's no flaws or errors. You can, when you're looking at the veins, you see non-pressed veins. It's beautiful.
I love that it's the new band, too. I have all the old bands, which look like crap. But the new bands are beautiful. The new bands are beautiful.
They do. And I should have taken a picture of some just so people could see it, but another day, another show. The last thing is the guy asked if we could tell by flavor, if we could tell if a cigar is real by flavor. And he said it tasted salty or minerally. So I took a picture real quick just as an example of a Rafael Gonzalez cigar box. And if you read what it says down here, it says, in order that the connoisseur may fully appreciate the perfect fragrance, that they should be smoked either within 1 month of the date of shipment from Havana or should be carefully matured for about 1 year. What does that mean? Well, what that means is this. The gentleman who sent this in to us, it was a rather fresh box. And so the flavors that he was experiencing were youth. And what happens with the Cuban tobacco, since it's not aged very long, is a second fermentation period. It happens with all cigars to a degree. It's just way more pronounced with Cubans. And sometimes, I think, in my opinion, it can happen twice, like with an H. Upman. But basically what that means is you get the cigar, and if you don't smoke it fresh, it goes through a fermentation period. So it's going to taste anything from salty to metallic to acidic to all these different descriptors that people use. And they need rest. And my example earlier was those Hoyo de Monterey Palmas de Extras I had. They were terrible when I got them, and then I waited a few months, and they were unbelievable. And so a lot of times you just have to wait. And I guarantee you this gentleman's probably going to email us in a few months and say, oh, my God, you are right. These are unbelievable now. So don't think just because
– beautiful.
Oh, they're good. They're very, very good. So don't think that because you sometimes when you get something fresh, it might taste like that. And that happens with Nicaraguan and Dominican cigars as well. But it specifically happens with Cuban cigars. And many times what you'll find is in that first year, you'll get that second fermentation period. And then like a year or two later, they'll go through it again. And it's maybe a lot shorter the second time around. But then after a certain period, I want to say after like 3 years, they just progressively get better and better and better and better and better and better and better.
Yeah, so they just get so good.
If it's a fresh box, basically, all I got to tell people is don't trip. Let it rest for 3 months and go from there.
Yep.
Another thing that I wanted to talk about is the new site that we do have up. It's cuban.cigarfederation.com, correct?
That's it, Cubans. Cuban.cigarfederation.com.
Somebody asked us why we put this up and as a separate site. Ultimately, we haven't connected it to Cigar Federation yet. I'm sure it will be at some point in time. But the main reason is Cigar Federation is for the brands that we carry in the U.S. and for brands in the U.S., and that's what we want to represent there, even though we will do some Cuban reviews or whatnot there. But Cuban Cigar Federation is more – we're looking at more of an international, smaller – kind of a grassroots little forum where we can get together, answer questions, help everybody out, get stuff for the shows, and kind of focus on just this and nothing else. And that way, it's more of a focused area. And in the future, if we can get if we start working in some international sponsorships and whatnot, that's something that we wanted to be separate from the host site. But it's still connected, obviously, because it's still within the family. It's just kind of we're like the little bastard stepchild for them, if you will. So, we're like Carrot Top of Cigar Federation, you know what I mean?
That's kind of disturbing that we're Carrot Top, but I know what you, yeah, I mean, it's a good way for...
Not really, Carrot Top sucks.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can go to Cigar Federation, I mean, and that's, you know, you go there and you can talk about, you know, everything, you know, domestic, you know, or, you know, if... But the Cubans is going to give you that opportunity where, you know, you really want to start talking about, you know, your Cigar Federation member or even not, you know, you can go in there and just start talking Cubans. You know, there's no other American forum that does this. I mean, mm-hmm. this is the only American forum or I mean forum that's led by a bunch of Americans that were talking about Cuban cigars. And I think it's smart that we're doing it just because there's plenty of us that are smoking Cuban cigars. And, you know, we should have something dedicated to us. Yeah, so it'll be absolutely interesting. And, you know, we'll get the international people in there, and it's going to be educating. It's going to be fun. It's just, it'll be a good time.
So it's nothing more than just it's like a home away from home for everybody to just go chill out at. And I think over time we'll find that more people will gravitate to it for specific questions. It's just, I guess more than anything, Cigar Federation in general is, you know, a multivariate platform that is designed to give the consumer, you know, news, reviews. Anybody can post a review there. Anybody can post a link to their website there. A store to where you can buy the cigars, where you take, you know, if you read a review and you want to try it, you can buy it. You know, just tons of information, a forum, a chat room where everybody can interact and whatnot. This is more focused just to pinpoint down on what we're specifically talking about. And specifically if and when we reach the international market, then we can advertise as such in those markets. Because, you know, those guys, there's a lot of vendors out there that those guys can use and want to buy from. And we, you know, in the American market, it's none of our business, really, for the most part. And so,
and I mean, I get emails and I know you
get
emails.
That's why we have it there.
We get emails about it all the time. You know, the other thing we need to talk about is tomorrow night, 8 p.m., this is kind of for everybody. This is for everybody, is Cigar Chat. Smokin' Logan and Robin Graz will be on the air with Michael Giannini of General of La Gloria Cubana and Founder Cigars. So that should be a very good show.
Okay.
Learn a lot, have fun. There'll be prizes. And then after that, at 9, what do you mean, hold on?
Hold on.
Oh, you're on the phone. You're saying hold on the phone.
Akil Kapasi from Regis Cigars is now. Akil, you're live, dude. You're on a podcast about Habano cigars.
It's Regis.
Say hello. Say hello to everybody, bro.
Bloody hell! How are you?
Can you guys hear him?
I can hear him, man.
You're live on TV, mate.
Yep, you're live on TV, dude. Let me call you back.
You're live
in a
on
bit.
TV.
Give me a bell.
I'll give you a call back in just a second. Later. Sorry, I had to throw him on and make it awkward for him.
Oh, that was great. And then at 9 p.m., I should have told him I smoked this Corona the other night. Then at 9 p.m., we have Stogie Geeks with Cigar Coop, Stogie Santa, Mark Jr., and Paul, which is kind of like everyone's
Coop
got like that.
Coop, dude.
You got Cigar Coop, Cigar Coop, Stogie Santa, Mark
Nobody
Jr.,
can out-scoop the Coop, dude.
Paul, and then it's just Paul. But they have Lou Rod and Justin Andrews of Lou Rodriguez Cigars on there, so that'll be a really good show. I'm looking forward to that. And they're also smoking a blind cigar, which I've yet to tell them what it is. I might tell you after the show. They'll be guessing. So pay attention tomorrow night, 8 till midnight. Cigar waves headed everywhere.
And then we have one last, because we were a little bit over time, but we have one last question that I wanted to get to that one of the guys on the forum asked, and I think you'll be best to answer the question, although I have a little bit of experience. But the question was, do you think certain areas that sell, quote-unquote, embargo cigars or Cuban cigars are more likely to try and supply counterfeits? For example, I would think that you are more likely to find counterfeits in top tourist cruise ship destinations like Mexico or Jamaica compared to going to a local B&M in Sweden. What do you think? And my answer to that is very simple. You are right.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct.
I've been to a couple places outside of the country, specifically like the Bahamas. The fakes are all over the beach. They're all over the little shops. Unless you go to, and I don't remember if there was an LCDH there. I just know that I bought a couple inside the, what the hell is that damn huge hotel I stayed at with the water slides and everything? Atlantis.
That's legit.
Yeah, I paid out the wazoo for some there, and they were legit. No big deal. But, you know, yes, to answer your question, yes. I think duty-free shops are probably your safest bet. LCDHs are your safest bet. And then, Seth, I know you've traveled a little bit more internationally than I have. What's your two cents on that?
Yeah, I mean, most, you know, when I've been down to the, you know, the Caribbean, I've always looked for places which I know are legit. You know, I always email distributors just to make sure, hey, is this a legitimate store? You know, duty free is pretty good. I actually got some Hardiga Siri D4 Tubos from duty free, which were just phenomenal. I mean, they were great. But other than that, you know, every other location that I've been, it's not really a tourist hotspot for Americans. So they're like, why are we going to even bother selling fake ones? Because it's like, it's not profitable. So, but, you know, actually I heard from this guy who was in Afghanistan that there was like the Czechs were selling, there was a little Czech kiosk which was selling legitimate Cubans, which, I don't know, probably was. I don't know, maybe it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'd send a bunch of non-Cubans, but either way. But, yeah, so that's about it from One Embargo, Episode Dose. You can watch
episode
it again.
Dose.
Watch it again tomorrow later on, but do you have anything else, Catfish?
I don't think I have anything else other than, we'll be back for Episode 3. We have no clue what we're going to do, so if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or just want to talk smack to us about whatever hate-tastic thing you want to bring up, go ahead and contact us at cuban.cigarfederation.com. You can email me at dustin@cigarfederation.com. You can email the tune at oneembargo@gmail.com. You can also find us on the Cigar Federation off and on all the time. Support your local Cigar Federation. Support your local cigar shops. Support your international cigar shops. And long ashes to all of you wonderful
folks. We also have a Facebook page, One Embargo.
Yes, we do have a Facebook page. I know. Facebook page, One Embargo. So just keep an eye on us. If you guys want to hear some, if you want to know about some, please let us know because we have the contacts to find the answers. And I think the more and more we get into this show, the more we want to dig into the history of these brands and some of these wonderful cigars. And I guess my closing statement is if you get a chance, buy the new Monte Cristo number 2s if you're traveling internationally at your local LCDH. Because they are freaking unbelievable. Unbelievable. Dang. And I know they're going to age into complete gems. So I can't recommend it highly enough. I totally agree with CA's rating. While I'm sure everybody has different palates and everybody can say this or that, I don't have a problem with them rating that number 1. I think that was – if they had the cigar I had last night when I reviewed it, that was freaking ridiculous. So hats off to CA for choosing a fantastic cigar this year.
Cheers, CA. Monte Cristo number 2, number 1. Guys, later. Out.